Ed and Rizan Ferrelli on 2FM
with Virgin Mobile. Go from scrolling through stories to creating your own. Freedom is calling. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
We are 1 month out from the most controversial World Cup ever. It's a World Cup that has been, well, it's been kind of plagued with issues since Qatar won the bid to host the tournament over 10 years ago. Joining me now is presenter of Game On here on 2FM, Marie Crow. Good morning. We need to break this down because a lot is going on.
It is. It's really hard to even kind of reset your body clock to accept that there's a World Cup coming in November and December, because usually it's on in the summer and the kids are on holidays. And
my husband's very excited and my mother, because it's like, oh, we can watch it over Christmas, you know.
There's going to be four matches on every day, so anyone that's working from home, like, you might as well forget about any productivity, because they're from about like 10 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the evening. It's going to be wall to wall football, so I can imagine anyone who was supposed to go back to work will be trying to extend it, and they'll be sitting there with their laptops actually not really doing any work and watching Brazil and Argentina at 10 o'clock on a Thursday morning.
It's going to be so weird.
It'll be weird.
So weird, but I think welcome. So how did Qatar win the bid? When did all that happen?
That is a very pertinent question.
let's go right back.
So back in 2010, they were awarded the World Cup and everybody was in absolute shock because they didn't have the infrastructure. It's a tiny place, six times smaller than Ireland. And the fact that the weather was so hot in the summer, but they got it and the whole country went absolutely bananas. There were celebrations on the street. I think just the whole world was in shock, and I actually didn't expect it to go through. Every kind of passing month and year, I thought they're going to take it off them. Like, they're going to realise they've made a terrible decision here.
There was rumours that they bribed FIFA officials. Has any of this been proven or...
It hasn't been proven, but there have been wild rumours that there was bribery involved. And as with a lot of these major organisations, there are people there that have in the past crossed lines and done things that they haven't, that they weren't supposed to, and have stepped away from organisations. And there's been a huge amount of football corruption and corruption in football over, I'd say, since forever. So there are huge amounts of question marks, but there's never actually been anything proven, and the show's going on.
But it's happening.
It is happening.
It is happening. So tell us about Qatar generally.
I was there.
Yes.
So I went to the Club World Cup in 2019. Liverpool were playing over there. So my family are huge Liverpool fans. So we went down to over there to watch it. And it was very much in the middle of construction. So they're building seven stadiums. And it's like having the World Cup, or it would be like having the World Cup in Cork, basically, right? So they have all of these absolutely mind-blowing stadiums, like the biggest, fanciest, like every sort of a
anything
I've ever seen. Wow. Like they're all been built from scratch for this, but they're all within real close proximity to each one. So you could go and hop on a tube and go to three matches in a day if you wanted to. So they've built a whole new tube system as well that links all the stadiums together. But everything is done, like there's no expense spared. So you're going on the tube and it's like 50 cent to go on the tube, but it's like a golden tube, you know? So you're like, you're sitting there on these golden kind of king-like seats to go to your games. Like, it's not a tube like you'd see in the underground in London. It's like state-of-the-art. So they've built 100 hotels and all of them are five-star amazing hotels that like you wouldn't see anywhere. But they've got this huge influx of people coming and they don't have enough hotels because it's a tiny, tiny, tiny country. So they've had to come up with all these innovative ways to host all the people that are going to come. So they're bringing in these massive cruise ships. So they had to build a port, of course, because they're building everything.
And an airport.
Yeah. And they are building all the hotels and all the stadiums, and they're putting, as well as having these huge cruise ships for people to sleep on, they've built these mass campsites in the desert as well, so you can opt to stay out in the desert and have like an authentic experience there.
No thanks. How much do these lads have? I mean, how much is this costing? Do we have any idea? Has that been revealed?
So it's supposedly the most expensive World Cup ever to be staged, so you're looking at 200 billion. And you know the way figures are as well, that's probably a conservative estimate. There's probably way more, but they just seem to have endless money. And you know, they want to showcase Qatar and they want to show how much money they have as well. And it's really just it's going to be box office, showbiz, like everything.
No, it's going to be a spectacle to watch. I mean, it's going to be just incredible. But one of the most horrific aspects of preparations for this World Cup is the fact that so many migrant workers have died. Mm-hmm. Data last year said a conservative estimate of the amount of deaths is 6,500 people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. What on earth is happening?
So, Jen, it's really hot over there. Like, it is absolutely scorching in the summer. And all of the workers have been working for the last 10 years in that heat.
Conditions.
Yeah. And they were trying to bring in things like cooling suits to put on the workers, but I don't think they actually cared. It was just to portray some sort of an image internationally that they were looking after the workers. But clearly those numbers, that 6,500 number was in The Guardian. The Qatari government are completely contesting this. They're saying that it's an overestimate, that a lot of these people would have died from natural causes. And they're saying that there was only 37 deaths work-related, which is being obviously said as a complete underestimate, because they aren't taking into account anybody that dies from respiratory issues or heart issues or, you know, the heat stroke or anything like that. They're just saying those 37 deaths were things that happened on site, people that were on a work site and there were something had happened, like something fell or there was a couple of people were electrocuted, things like that. But like clearly there's a huge amount more deaths that they're not even doing autopsies on these workers. They're just
because they're replaceable. They're like, oh, we'll just, I mean, the mindset behind it, even 37, I mean, but they're lamping these places up.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So there's going to be faults. There's going to be problems. There's going to be things.
And there is no care either. So they're working for hours and hours every single day. It's not like they're doing their 9 to 5. They're working every hour that's available to them. They're not getting paid very much. There's been so many reports about wages being withheld. They take the passports off the people. It's like they own them, basically. And they've had
slavery. Labor.
It is, yeah. It is actually that. And you, the only way you hear about things is when their families from the countries outside of Qatar are able to speak and try and tell their stories. But inside, it seems like, just from looking at, there's been documentaries about the conditions that they've been working on and living in. And they're horrific. And, you wouldn't really be surprised that the numbers are so high of deaths when they're being put through what they're being put through.
And this isn't just Qatar. This is all over the Emirates States as well. There's lots of issues. Another issue is the fact that being gay is illegal in Qatar. It's terrible to even say it. But will gay people have to be careful over there and watch how they behave, holding hands or whatever?
I think they will. Because I was there, and women as well, there's women have to dress a certain way, and you would feel very conscious of being doing things that you're not supposed to over there, because, you know, it's not like being in Ireland. It's not like you have a government and consuls and all that sort of stuff. They are saying that when it comes to gay couples over there, that they will be accepting of them. You can bring your rainbow flag, but you have to be respectful of their culture. So you can interpret that whatever way you want. But I'd say anyone who is going over there who is gay would have to be extremely careful, because you don't know what way they will react to you and what could happen. And it's very difficult for anyone who is gay and a football fan and wants to go and support their country, because you would have to be in fear when you're heading over there, because it's illegal. And how much of it are they going to turn a blind eye to? And you just don't know who you're dealing with.
Let's talk about alcohol. It's a Muslim country, and alcohol, it isn't really served there, but it is. I mean, they have these crazy brunches that you can get absolutely plastered at in hotels and Irish bars and that and stuff like that. Can people drink at matches?
No.
Okay.
So you can drink.
That's half the nation out.
You can drink in the fan zones and you can drink in the hotels, but you'd want to have a good few quid now heading over with you if you think you're going to go to the hotel every night of the week and start lamping back the points. It's really expensive. They don't want to promote it in any way. There'll be no drinking on the streets. There's no off licenses. You're not going to see anyone walking down the road with a bottle of wine in their hands. It's very much confined to the hotels and to the fan zones. Again, it's not their culture. They don't want to be seen to encourage it or to promote it, and they will definitely be enforcing it as well. And I think it's only when it actually happens and people get there that they realise just how difficult it's going to be to behave in the way that they behave in their home countries.
Well, that might be a welcome. You know what I mean? I mean, that might, you know, curb some
antisocial behavior.
So that might be okay. But if you know someone who's going over there and maybe is not aware of the culture and the laws in place, maybe tell them before they buy that ticket.
I think they're going to have drunk tanks. So they're going to be picking people up off the street and putting them into little boxes.
You don't want to be in that box. I cannot believe David Beckham. We need to talk about David Beckham. A huge source of controversy is David Beckham, who apparently is being paid $150 million to be the poster boy for the tournament and indeed to promote Qatar as a tourist destination. That was in the small print. Let's have a listen to him in action here. Have a listen to this.
It's another beautiful day here in Qatar.
Welcome to Doha, David.
Beautiful, huh?
The modern and traditional fused to create something really special. Qatar really is an incredible place to spend a few days on a stopover.
I cannot wait to bring my children back.
Oh, as long as they're not gay.
Or big drinkers.
He's been heavily criticised for this, and I can see why. 150 million. He's taken the money and taken into consideration everything that we've just spoke about and Qatar's human rights record. What do you think? Has he permanently damaged his image here with people at home?
I think we're long past holding footballers up as anyone that would not take money for their own gain or for expecting them to have moral standards or standards of any sort. Really just been so much bad press about footballers over the last while. I'm not surprised. Somebody was going to do it. It was going to be one of the biggest players, one of the biggest names, and many will come out as well over the next month or so to promote it. But there's plenty as well who are shining a spotlight on what's happening there. And one of them, I just watched his documentary yesterday, is Gary Neville. And he's actually going around Qatar and meeting the migrant workers and actually painting a picture of what it's really like.
Okay.
And he feels that, okay, he could stand up and give out about it and, you know, just say he's not going and be totally anti the World Cup. But what's the point in that as well? Like, he needs to actually tell the story of what's happening there, and he's doing that, whereas David Beckham is not. He is just he's turning a blind eye to the reality of the situation there for the migrant workers, for gay people and for women as well. So I just wouldn't even bother being disappointed with him. I'm not even surprised.
How much money do you need?
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, how much money do you need, David Beckham? And it's awful because...
Well, he has to buy Brooklyn a new car all the time because Brooklyn doesn't do anything himself.
This is true. And then I was chatting to Anita and we were like, oh God, that queuing for 12 hours for the Queen, is that all look at me to make up for
reputational damage. But the problem is that everybody has short memories. Like, so I mean, once the World Cup's over and he does something like that again, you'll probably just forget and go, oh, isn't he lovely?
That's very true. Are we excited about the world? I mean, how are you feeling about that? Are you excited about it with all that going on? And who's your favourite to win?
It's really hard because, you know, you do feel conflicted morally. Like, everybody who's going to watch the World Cup loves football and you want to see the best teams in the world playing matches against each other, and you do get caught up on the sport of it. But you don't really want to forget about what's happening in the background and how they got there as well, because it's been such a horrific experience for so many people. But I know when it comes around, and look, I'm not going to pretend any other way, I will watch it. I will sit there for the 12 hours of the day that the football is on. I will probably do a little bit less work than I'm supposed to when I'm working from home, because I'll be watching the football. I might let the kids take off an afternoon every now and again if there's a huge game on. I'm going to buy into it because I love watching it and I can't help it. That's what I do. And I'll be talking about it on Game On for sure. So yeah, it's going to come. Like, the Premier League's going to take a bit of a back seat and we're going to be fully focused on it. The times are really good for the games. They're on all during the day from like 10 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock in the evening. So I'd say people will be captivated by it. Ireland are obviously not in it. So it's... It's not the same, but we're kind of used to that now.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to have these chats so people are aware.
Yeah,
if going
exactly.
Over what really they're getting themselves in for. What bandwagon should we hop
Brazil,
on?
All the way. Okay. They're the firm favourites. They've, I think, won 29 games in a row. And they're just going to be amazing to watch. Like, the colour in the show and everything they're going to put on will be brilliant. But I do think as well, while all of that is going on, things are going to happen and bad things are going to happen because people are going into a culture that they're probably not prepared for. And it's going to be the meeting of two very different societies. So there will be carnage at some stage over it.
Marie Crowe, presenter of Game On, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning. Game On is, of course, on from 6 to 7 p.m. Monday to Friday right here on 2FM. 2FM.
Jennifer Zaffarelli.
Weekday morning from 9
on 2FM.